This thing on? Hello, everyone. I am Toni St. Clair. I had the pleasure of meeting most of you earlier today. So I will tell you my story. I told you earlier I'm a work in progress. I still am. I met Dr. Rita Marie a couple years ago. I knew about her, but I thought, ooh, that's woo-woo, and I didn't want to be bothered with that because I was a left-brain person. And then as I evolved, I found her again, and I thought it was Shine, first Shine, I think. And I saw the agenda. I said, wow, that's a whole lot of stuff she's giving for that kind of money. And I wanted to show up for that. And it was apparent to me this woman is a genius. She has a lot to bring to the world. She has changed my life so that I could change others' lives. That's all I can tell you. She is like the gift that keeps on giving. You know, she touches us, we touch other people. Don't diminish that value. It's amazing. We are out here changing lives because of her. She's the vortex that sucked us all in, right? And so I got to meet all you wonderful people as a result. But this is not about me. I now have the pleasure of introducing the woman who has changed my life and who's going to change your life so you can change others. The fabulous, the wonderful, the energetic, the never sleeping, Dr. Rita Marie Lascazo.
All right. So thank you all for being in your seats and being on time. And you enjoying everything so far? Food good? Learning enough? Full yet? Want to learn more? Yes? Ready to learn about gut? Ready to learn about gut bugs in a way that you haven't heard it talked about before? Gut bugs and how to test for them and identify them? All right. So I'm going to introduce, it's my pleasure to introduce someone who I've gotten to know very well over the last few years, because not only is she in our NEPT program, she's in our Practice Accelerator program, so we get to coach one-on-one with her in building her business. And she has done a whopping job and created a couple of programs for consumers and a practitioner training. And I never know, she's always got something new up her sleeve because she's got this unique way of dealing with gut bugs that we all like to hear about. So she's full of heart, she's brilliant, and she's very humble. So introduce yourself on a break afterwards and have a conversation with her because she just is full of gems. So without further ado, Steph Jackson.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. All right. Tea. So I want to thank Dr. Rita Marie for having me here and having me speak again. If you came last year to Shine, we did a pretty general overview of some of the gut bacteria and how they relate to each other and how to take a look at the big picture. And I'd like to go even deeper into how to see the forest for the trees in the microbiome today. So welcome to Mastering Digestive Assessment. And in this talk, we're going to learn three tests, my favorite three tests that will change everything for your clients. Five things that are really great to find out about on an initial consultation. The pros and the cons of the most popular digestive testing. And five things you can't afford to miss, in my opinion. So many of you have heard my story a few years ago. I had psoriatic arthritis, and I had a whole bunch of other weird symptoms, and I just got really frustrated with getting a diagnosis, and I took it upon myself to strategically rebuild my gut, and I had health that I had never had before, but I'm not going to tell that story. I've decided I would like to tell a story about the first time I ever made my own strategy to rebuild my gut, which was actually 18 years ago, and this is a story that I completely forgotten about, probably blacked it out. This is totally miserable. I was really sick. I was working three jobs at the time. I was teaching at a school. I was teaching guitar 6 days a week at another music school. And then I was playing gigs at night, so I would get, you know, a few hours of sleep and horrid self-care. And I had also recently figured out that I was a celiac, and I was having crazy gut symptoms, even though I had dropped the gluten. And at the time, there was no FODMAP diet. That wasn't a thing. Even gluten-free was a pretty wacky thing to be doing, and that seems really recent to me. And I didn't know what to do, and I went to a bunch of doctors, and I got a bunch of pamphlets about IBS, and, you know, I felt really tired. I fell asleep at the wheel several times. I would fall asleep while teaching guitar to my students. I literally would be in the middle of a phrase of music, and then I'd listen to them play, and I actually would fall asleep. They probably thought I was like a junkie. It was really bad. I didn't know what to do. And there weren't the probiotics on the market, and I didn't have the knowledge that I have today. And I decided that I would just eat whatever it was that didn't cause symptoms. So I found one food that did not make me feel like crap, and it was pumpkin. So I ate steamed pumpkin for at least 3 weeks and nothing else. I tried to put lemon juice on it, it made me feel sick. I tried to put pepper on it, I fell asleep. I remember one time I made a salad dressing no FODMAP information, and, you know, I was just a kid, so onions, I put onions in the salad dressing, and I had just a full body rash, and all this stuff happened. So back to pumpkin. You know, I cried, I lost a lot of weight, and not in a good way. And then I added one food at a time. One food at a time. And this went on for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks, and I did get better. And there were not the assessments, there was nobody to help me, I didn't have any of the gut tests that we have now. And this time, so in between there I had, you know, years and years of reasonably good health. And I traveled a lot, and I went to China, and I got amoebic dysentery. I was not going to tell you that. But so I came home, you know, and I got sick, and I had the rheumatoid arthritis, and I had a lot of things. And the testing that's available now is totally different from what was available before. And the knowledge that's out there, and like the PubMed, and if you just surf good internet, you know, the information that we have available to us is amazing. And that's my son up there, and I can see that, you know, that was after drinking a kombucha. He'll get, you know, rashes and stuff, and that's a big part of why I'm so dedicated to doing this, because obviously there is a genetic component, but the microbiome is so important. Water, pumpkins, butternut squash. Yeah. All right. So why do we care about digestion? Why should we care about digestion? I'd love to get a mic runner, and I actually want, because we've had some really good information yesterday, Tom O'Brien's talk. Why do we care? I want to know from you. I want it mic'd so that it's totally everyone can. I agree. Yeah, we won't write this. I'll write something later.
Our gut is our first brain.
It's our first brain. Anything else? I agree.
It's first line of defense in your immune system.
Absolutely. So this is the place where we encounter the most of our outside environment. We're taking our outside environment into our body. We're consuming it literally. And this is where we encounter it, and this is where we need our defenses. Absolutely. And just about this brain thing too, you know, like what we were saying, there are so many more nerve endings that go from the gut to the brain than vice versa. And so often when someone is depressed or is feeling anxiety, and we just try to tell them to calm down and meditate, but, you know, there's biochemical stuff going on, and there's the microbiome, and it needs to be addressed.
I was going to say that really no other system really works well until you get it that right. You know, inflammation, everything else, like you were just kind of summing up, well, you know, neurologically and you know, every other system you can think of in the body really depends on that desperately to be right.
Yeah, in so many ways, we're completely dependent on that. If we can't get the nutrients that we need to survive, we don't survive. I mean, bottom line. let alone thrive. So I've made five principles of gut health. You can't really see the red on the slide. But so we want to transform the digestive environment. We want to restore a balanced microbiome. We want to have good nutrition, and we want to be able to absorb it and utilize it. We want to modify behaviors that are affecting digestion, and that includes what we're eating, includes what I was doing, working too much. We want to transform stress. I separated that from modify behaviors because I really believe transforming stress involves actually sleeping and having fun. And that deserves a whole separate bullet point. Yeah. Yeah, we'll expand on those later. And I made this fun formula for you. Time plus nutrition minus damage equals digestive health. Yeah, years and years of study and this. But really, like, time plus nutrition minus damage equals health. Right? And with time, we know what time is. Nutrition, we have ways to test that. We have the SpectraCell that we talked about over dinner last night, and there's a lot that we can glean from just a CBC. You know, we can work with our clients on what they're eating, but if they're not absorbing it. And damage, this is what we don't know. We don't know what their microbiome is when we look at them, even though sometimes I think that I can. We don't know what their microbiome is when we look at them. We don't know what they're really eating. All we can do is infer based on what they're saying and what they fill out in our forms. So we need to really be detectives and really look into what's getting in the way, what's in between your client and their healing. Because I honestly believe that if we have the raw materials that we need to heal, and if nothing's getting in the way, there's no reason why we should not be getting better. Okay, so get to the bottom of what's getting in the way. We need good interview skills. We need reliable testing. And we need to know what to do with the testing. We need to be able to look at it in context. And that's what we're going to talk about. So a little bit more about when you first meet with your client. To get some of this information, we really need to ask open-ended questions. I love this on a form so that they can just take their time and fill things out. I'm going to give an example of an open-ended question. So it would be the difference between saying to me, it's been said to me, do you get rashes? And I would say no. But if someone said, tell me the history of your skin, it sounds like a silly question, but I would say, you know, when I was 3 months old, I was diagnosed with urticaria. You know, I get hives when I eat certain foods. I had cystic acne, and I had psoriasis that I had to hide from everybody. And I think that that's valuable information. If somebody may have asked me that, they may have figured out the psoriatic arthritis thing, you know, a decade earlier. You know, and yes, we need to keep our clients on track, but asking a question in more of an open way, or like, how many times a year do you eat flatbread, rather than, are you gluten-free? You know, having something, like I have on my forms, I have like radio buttons that they can fill in. How many times over the past, you know, 10 years have you felt obligated to eat the birthday cake, or whatever, right? Yeah. And historical too. We need to talk about that. So many of these digestive issues are passed down, you know, from mother to child or from spouse to spouse. And things like H. pylori. Things like dietary habits. Forget about gut bugs. There's so much that's passed down, right? If we can figure out if a parent has an issue of, you know, duodenal cancer or gastric reflux or something like that, that can give us a lot of information and can help us to choose the right test for our clients as well, because we don't want to be just getting random testing or, you know, spending their money and not getting the results that we need. So yeah, we want to ask questions, these open-ended questions, and have information that they can fill out in their forms around gastric reflux. Why would we want to know about heartburn? Can I get another mic runner? Why do we want to know about heartburn? Because you know this. Yeah.
If you make enough hydro- acid.
I want you to say it in the mic.
You will know if you make hydrochloric acid.
Yeah. Yeah. And how would this relate to the microbiome specifically? Why do we want to know about heartburn and the microbiome? And yes, you're right about the hydrochloric acid. Yeah, Diane.
Our friend H. pylori.
Totally. Yeah, we want to find out about that. We'll go more into that later. We want to ask questions around yeast. So we want to have the symptoms of yeast and just be able to ask those open-ended questions, like the skin question that I was talking about before. We want to ask questions about small intestinal imbalances. This one's pretty important. You want to know if your client is getting gas and bloating within the first 3 hours after they eat something. Like, let's just think about food here, right? It goes through your stomach and the stomach acid, then it goes to your small intestine, stays there for a while, depending on your motility, 3, maybe up to 5 hours, hopefully not, and then it goes away from that area. So if you're getting gas and bloating within the first 3 hours after eating, you want to know about that. Okay, you want your clients to be really specific. And people don't like to talk about that, but we need to know. Because if we can figure out that things are happening in the small intestine, you're gonna want to treat it differently. You're gonna want to do something different with your client. We want to find out about food. If I didn't write food on here, I would just be a complete idiot. So we could do all this cool stuff with the gut bugs, but if your client is not eating a diet that's conducive to their health, their own personal health, whatever their situation may be, then we're really missing it. We want to ask questions about amoebic parasites. Just quickly, some of the symptoms that can be associated with this are there might be abdominal pain, there might be pain like in the liver area, there might be gas and bloating, just like in SIBO. It really feels a lot like small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. And so you want to also get really specific about their history, their digestive history. And this is where I find testing is really important because it's really hard to tell the difference. These are the people sometimes that like they drink water and they have gas and bloating, and there's just no explanation for it. But with the popularity of the low FODMAP diet and whatever, berberine, your client may try a lot of things and may become disheartened if you don't discover this. Yeah, so these are the things that you cannot afford to miss, in my opinion. So if we miss H. pylori, which is often missed, so they're a spirochete, and they can hide out in the stomach, and they've been associated, and they're being associated with more and more autoimmune conditions as more and more studies are done. And the issue with this is that they don't like an acidic environment. H. pylori does not like stomach acid. So if your client is working on a whole digestive health protocol and they're taking hydrochloric acid or drinking vinegar before their meals or whatever, H. pylori is going to go, whoa, no thanks. And they're going to hide in the stomach or the duodenal mucosa. And what that means is that your client's immune system is going to go, whoa, and it's going to be a problem. And so it can worsen symptoms of a lot of autoimmune conditions if your client has H. pylori and if it's missed. And it's going to be missed unless you do the right testing. It's going to be missed.
If your partner had H. pylori, this is also contagious, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So mother-daughter H. pylori, like partner-partner H. pylori, it's a lot of these are transmitted through just sharing food and just sharing a household, and that's just, yeah. We're going to have hopefully some time for questions at the end as well. So, no, it was important. So bacterial interactions. If we miss the interactions between the bacteria, I think we're also in a pickle. So Dr. Tom O'Brien mentioned some bacteria that have been associated with colon cancer. And the ones that he mentioned, you know, they might make up 0.2% or less of our digestive flora. And they're not the catalysts in the environment. They're not the ones that change the environment to make it the wrong pH or reduce intestinal mucosa or reduce immunity, or they just happen to be there. You know, and we're studying these bacteria one at a time, and we're like, oh, this one has been associated with, you know, autism, and this one's been associated with colon cancer. And so we're not looking at the context of the whole microbiome in the gut. We are not really able to do anything about it if we just see one bacteria that we think is bad and we're trying to kill it. So we need to get the interactions. Again, we need to get the parasites. Environmental mold exposure. If we miss environmental mold exposure with our clients, especially, with any kind of a yeast or fungal thing or with Lyme, I think it's a really big problem. It can overwhelm the detox pathways. It can mimic so many other things. We can do some pretty cool gut healing protocols, but if they're in a moldy situation or even a really damp environment, they're not going to get better. All right. Food and lifestyle factors, if we miss this, like we can't miss this. All right, so I want to talk about some of my favorite tests. So my go-to tests. So I love the BioHealth 401H test. And you know what? I have this all. You don't have to write it down. I mean, you may want to. That's how I learn by writing. But I have this all that you can get. And I've also put together like an audio for you that covers a lot of this stuff. So, because I just figured we're not going to remember everything from today. So don't panic. So the BioHealth 401H test, I love this test. We're going to go into it. We're going to talk about the doctor's data, comprehensive with parasitology. And we're going to talk about the organic acid test. They're my three favorite tests in terms of what they cost your clients and the kind of results, assessments that they provide. Okay. Love the BioHealth 401H test. So it's from BioHealth. They have a 401 and a 401H, and the H is for their H. pylori test. It's the most accurate for H. pylori out of any of the tests. So sometimes they will miss it. But whereas the other tests are testing for our reaction to H. pylori or the H. pylori DNA or other things like this, this test is testing for something that the H. pylori makes, right? So it's more, even if the H. pylori is hiding, it's more likely to find them. So people will come after having the breath test or after having a stool test or after having the eubiome test all come back negative. The doctor's data test come back negative, and the 401H, I've actually run them all at the same time. The 401H will find the H. pylori. It's also the most accurate for amoebic parasites, like Blastocystis hominis. This is the only test that I ever run for that stuff. And it's easy to read and understand, which is really important, because your client is going to be like, whoa, what's this? this is the sample that they have online. This is just their sample. You can look at it on the BioHealth website. And I thought maybe we could just have a little, jam session and talk about some of these critters. Entamoeba coli is not E. coli. It's an amoebic parasite, which is also called E. coli. I don't know who names this stuff, but but great that they can find it on this test. What I really wanted to talk about, laser pointer. Yeah, what I really want to talk about here is this E. coli. So this is the good E. coli. And what I love about this test is that they always test for this E. coli. And there's too much of it here, in my opinion. This is one of the bacteria that can very much change the environment. Large intestine, awesome. We want it to be like that. We want it to be more acidic in there. Small intestine, not so awesome. So if your client is having gas and bloating like right away after eating, and it shows up on their test that they've got this, you know, +4 of E. coli, is really, really important to know about that and to address it. It's one of the top three bacteria associated with SIBO. It doesn't actually matter if your client has SIBO or not. What matters is that we know which bacteria are there and how to balance them out, right? Make sense? Okay. Klebsiella, I also wanted to talk about. Klebsiella, you may have heard of. It's in the media. It's a bad guy. What they do is they have this, they make kind of like a gelatinous goo that has an enzyme in it that breaks down our digestive mucosa. Klebsiella can break down our digestive mucosa, okay? And this gelatinous goo that they make protects them from antibiotics. So they're tough bugs. We take a course of antibiotics, which is sometimes necessary, and a lot of the other bacteria go away. There's no clean slate. Some of them survive, like these ones, because they're built for it. They can break down our mucosa. We need our mucosa to absorb our nutrients. We need it for our immunity in our gut. We need it for our vitamin A. We need our intestinal mucosa for defense just against things that are coming, physical objects that are coming through our digestive system. So it's a big deal when we see that on a test, okay? Yeah, so the most important things to look for on the BioHealth 401H test are H. pylori, the amoebic parasites, and E. coli, and other sort of important, like, keystone bacteria like that. So here's a bit of information about H. pylori. So not only do they prefer a low-acid environment like what we were talking about earlier, but they can help to ensure that it stays that way. So typically, if we have good stomach acid, we might have a few H. pylori in there, and it might not be an issue. But at the point where our stomach acid production goes down, as we age or as we drink Coca-Cola or whatever we're doing, they will become more comfortable. They'll come out. They'll produce bicarbonate. They can attack our parietal cells and reduce our own production of stomach acid. And being spirochetes, like the Borrelia, they can burrow into mucosa and into tissues and hide. And that's why I run this 401H test so often. They contribute to leaky gut. They've been strongly linked to over 90% of stomach and duodenal cancers. They make histamine. So if you have a client with a histamine issue and you want to run a gut test, the 401H test is a good one to run, is the only one I would run in that case. They've been associated with hypothyroid and other autoimmune conditions as well. PubMed. So H. pylori, that's what they look like. Nice picture of them. All right, so the doctor's data, and if you have questions, please write them down, because I would like to address them, because this can get a little bit... the doctor's data test. So it tests for bacteria and yeast and their susceptibility to herbs and pharmaceuticals, and that's why I love this test. So if I'm pretty sure the person doesn't have H. pylori, I really like this doctor's data test, because I can find out, you know, if they're taking oil of oregano, whether it's got any chance of being effective. The doctor's data test, the comprehensive, always tests for bifidobacterium and lactobacillus. And it shows a secretory IgA. We're going to talk about this in a little bit. Short-chain fatty acids. And it's easy to read and understand. Less easy to read and understand than the BioHealth. But it's pretty. So on this test, I mean, we've talked about the Klebsiella. But I just want to note that the E. coli, again, we've got the 4+ of the E. coli over in the green column, like they're all good and stuff, and they are. They're a normal flora, but there's too many of them in there. The bifidobacterium, and this is a client of mine's test, and she'd been taking like 2 adult scoops, which is about 700 billion bifidobacteria every day for months and months when she took this test. And like, we didn't have her genetics or anything, but it's my assumption that just eating a somewhat Western diet, that it's going to be in her best interest to continue to take bifidobacteria ongoing, based on how much she's been taking and how little she's able to build up a colony. Yeah, we might talk a little bit more about that later. You can see there's the no growth of the lactobacillus, which she was really annoyed because she just spent a lot of money on probiotics. But and you can see the Clostridium down there And so on the doctor's data test, they put the Clostridium down there. It's normal to have some Clostridium species, but they don't necessarily get specific with what they're testing here. So it depends on your client's symptoms. If your client has slow small intestinal motility and Clostridium is showing up on any test, including this one, they can interfere with dopamine detox, and they basically just slow down their motility. So that's how that's related. None of these tests are particularly awesome at finding yeasts. Don't tell them I said that. But so if yeasts like the Rhodoterula show up on this test or the BioHealth test, then I assume that they're definitely there. It's definitely an issue, a factor. All right. I love how the doctor's data comprehensive always measures the short chain fatty acids. So the butyrate, you probably know, is really important for healing leaky gut. They're not good or bad. There are bad things about some of these as well, like the propionic acid is also associated with autism as well. But we know that we need a certain amount of these to heal our gut. And so it's important information. So funny, she just loves oil of oregano, and we got this test back, and I was like, ha! So that's not working. but it's really awesome to have this. You know, and they test for the nystatin too, and you know what, it's in terms of pharmaceuticals, and depends on how your client is. If I was going to tell them to go to their doctor and talk to them about something like nystatin, I'm glad that they test for that, because sometimes they come back and the nystatin is low sensitivity, but often it comes back high sensitivity, and all these cool herbs are all not working for them. So there are tons of antifungals in the world, but these are the most common ones, and so I really enjoy having that. You can see the Klebsiella is not only a tough bacteria, but a smart one. And so taking oil of oregano or uva ursi or anything, berberine, she was also taking that for her blood sugar issues. And you can see that's going to have no effect on the Klebsiella. So as an aside, rotation is really important. But it's great to have this information. Yeah, again, not the best test for yeasts, but some of the yeasts that might be showing up are Candida, the brewer's yeast, which is the Saccharomyces cerevisiae, which Dr. Tom O'Brien was also mentioning with inflammatory bowel diseases. Aspergillus, Rhodoterula. There are so many different yeasts that we're just not normally testing for. And people make the mistake of just testing for Candida, but there are so many different yeasts that can be affecting our gut. Yeah, so again, the most important things are the yeast and bacterial susceptibilities to the different fungi, the different herbs and things that are available. The secretory IgA, which we should talk about in just a sec. Short-chain fatty acids, beneficial bacteria, E. coli, Klebsiella, and any other kind of important dysbiotic flora. So they're not going to test for everything, but they are testing for a lot of the bacteria that can really change the environment in the gut. And we want to change the environment to make it a healthier environment that's not going to support the growth of these microorganisms that are not beneficial for our health. We want to focus on the health of the whole society rather than a couple. And so these more influential bacteria are being tested for on these tests. So we have the technology to change everything, even though we might not be able to find out if the person has this one particular gut bug that we read about. The secretory IgA, so it's an antibody in our mucosa, and there's like a lot of it at any given time in the gut, and that's really healthy. This is like 3 grams or more or something like that of this going on in our gut at a given time, because it's where we encounter the environment. But when there's too much of it, it can be an indication that the body's fighting something, because that's what we're supposed to do when something is going wrong. All right. I feel like I'm losing you. Okay, cool. So E. coli, some strains have been linked to urinary tract infections and mastitis, which I'm sure that you know. They produce some cool stuff like vitamin K2 and glutathione, and there are a lot of supplements that really focus on E. coli right now because a lot of studies have come out showing that they produce glutathione. And like, that's awesome, but not for everybody. Right? So like this one cool study will come out, which I'm sure is funded by someone, and then someone makes like a probiotic that they sell us and tell us how great it is because it does this thing, and like we don't all need this thing. They also produce D-lactic acid, which is what I'm talking about, that can really change the small intestinal environment. So large intestine, fine. Small intestine, no. We don't have the mechanism to detox D-lactic acid like that. There's L-lactic acid and D-lactic acid. D-lactic acid we can't handle in that quantity. So I don't care if it's in the green section. I don't care if your client has read a bunch of studies. If they have E. coli and they have symptoms of gas and bloating after eating, it needs to be dealt with. Yeah, so some strains can be easily resistant to drugs, herbs, oils, and extracts. And so I did talk about this. I think it was Spring Into Vitality, though. So, but there's the pretty gut bugs. There's the popular ones. There's the tough ones, like the Klebsiella with the bubble. And then there's the smart ones. And E. coli is both smart and tough. And they will, you know, they can, within a couple of weeks, become resistant to something. Yeah, and they were the first, they were one of the first, like, way back when there was a study about... it was in mice, showing that when they had a certain type of E. coli in their gut, they became obese. And then they could take the E. coli away, and then they would be like not obese. So it was one of the earlier. It was like right at the beginning of this. Yeah. Okay, organic acid test. I love this test. It's a little bit nerdy. Your clients are going to be like, what is this? And you're going to need to explain it to them, but it's a great test. It shows markers for oxalates, for bacterial and yeast overgrowth, for neurotransmitters, for C. diff, and for B12 as well, which I was reminded of yesterday. All right. So this is a test of an 8-year-old girl, of a client of mine, and like this, right? Unfortunately, you know what? She went to a practitioner. They ordered this test. They didn't do any follow-up. They never had another meeting. They gave her the test via email 3 years later. She'd been having these neurological symptoms, sit down, stand up, like for minutes at a time, banging her head on the wall, stuff like this. It's all here on this test. These people are coming to us for help, and they don't know how to read these tests. And it's on us to know how to do this. Because we can't abandon them like that. Okay, so she was 11 when I met with her, and they brought this test upon my asking them to get it. And they were like, oh, I think we got that before. You know, so we redid it, but this was all there. So yeast and fungal and bacterial markers and the arabinose. Whoops, no, don't change. Go back. How do I go back? Yeah. So the arabinose is the one that you're probably going to hear talked about the most. If I'm just suspecting yeast and there's no real other reason to take this test, I don't always do it. There's a lot of information here. It can be really overwhelming for people. Yeah. Something I was going to talk about here, the Clostridia markers. It's important to kind of check this out if your client has low motility in the small intestine. I want to talk about the oxalates here, and then I think we're going to just move on from this. These are some markers for oxalates in the body. This bottom one, number 22, is kind of the overall, like, do we have too many oxalates going on? And then these ones can show us if your client is able to produce enough enzymes to degrade the oxalates in their own body. It's important to, like, let's just take a step back. This is a urine test. So it's showing, it's not a poop test. It's not showing stuff that's in the gut. It's showing stuff that's gone through into the body and is like there's something happening. It's affecting your client's biochemistry. It's important information. Something is happening in there. Do you guys want one more thing or you want to go to the next slide? One more thing? Okay. So another thing on this test, the quinolinic acid. It's like a tyrosine, am I saying that right, metabolite. We tend to produce more of this when we are fighting something, when we have gut inflammation. And it's a neurotoxin. It's an excitotoxin. It's been strongly linked to neurological conditions. That's important information, and you can read more about that as well, but it's a good, just a heads up that that's important to know about. Okay, yeah, so in summary, we want to look for yeast and bacteria, we want to look for oxalates, we want to look for anything that's linked to neurotransmitters, and we want to look at B12. All right. Pink, not a good color for slides. But it matches the candida. So I want to talk about yeasts for a sec. So yeasts, fungi, what's the deal? A lot of the yeasts that can affect our bodies behave more like fungi. And so the way that fungi will reproduce is that they have these kind of like finger-like, they're called hyphae, and they have these little projections that they can use to glom onto things, like grab onto our mucosa or gut wall or go through things. Leaky gut, right there. Candida and other fungi are largely responsible for breaking down our bodies after we die. They're like built for that, right? They make it possible for the other bacteria to, I know it's really morbid, but like they're just built to go through our tissues. That's how fungi reproduce. And candida and a lot of the other yeasts in our bodies behave in that way. So they can produce histamine and acetaldehyde and oxalates, you know, which we just talked about. They can reduce bifidobacterium, which is super important. So they can be associated with estrogen dominance or with symptoms of estrogen dominance. The whole thing about the thickening of our mucosa and having excess estrogen and not enough bifidum and too much candida is a really connected phenomenon. It's in their favor for us to have more estrogen and thicker mucosa vaginally and in our gut. It's a better environment for them. So they've been linked to like lots of stuff. Right? But bottom line, anything that contributes to dysbiosis resulting in leaky gut, I mean, could be linked to anything, right? There's a cute picture of some gross yeast. Yeah. I get a lot of questions about the Ubiome test. It's cheap, it's fun. I really don't find it to be that clinically relevant. You know, it can show families, but it can't show species specificity or strain. And, you know, some of these behaviors of the bacteria, it's down to the strain of the species, right? And so we're kind of at the family level in the Ubiome test, and they're still refining their test. But it can only also find things that they're looking for because it's a genetic test. So yeah, it doesn't really show, again, the context of anything. And they can just tell you a bunch of fun stuff about bacteria because they're not allowed to give you medical information. So your client will get the test, and then they'll go to the website and they'll click on things and read some cool stuff about bacteria. And all the bacteria that we really need to know about are kind of like blacked out, and they don't have any information there yet. I don't know. Has anyone who's ever got the Eubiome test? Yeah. So I'm really struggling to even put together like an educational program so that people can understand their own Eubiome, because there are thousands of different bacteria, and because there's all this cute information on the website, and I just don't know what to do about it. And I actually don't care what 0.02% of your gut flora is and how unique it is. I care about the overall phenomenon that's happening in your gut and how that's affecting your body. Okay, yeah, so these are just like some big points that I wanted you to take away from this in case I sidetracked. So E. coli can acidify the environment in the small intestine. Klebsiella can break down the mucosa, which is very important. Gut flora will consume what we can't digest. Forgot to talk about that. Gut flora will consume what we can't digest. And this means if we eat a bunch of high-fat food and we're having trouble digesting fat, we're having some liver issues, we are going to get more Firmicutes bacteria, or more bacteria that can digest the fat. So if we're consuming like a lot of fibers, we're going to get more bacteria that can digest the fiber. And it's not like the same bacteria can adapt. It's just that different species will grow depending on what we eat. And this can change within weeks, right? Diet is still the key here. Bifidobacteria can represent up to 10% of our gut flora, mostly in our large intestine. Lactobacillus can be up to 2% of our gut flora. So take a look at your probiotics and see what the distribution is in there. Okay, let's play a little game. So Rooker's going to hand out some sheets to you. And we're going to play a little game. Okay, so what I want to do is don't share with your neighbor, please, the contents of the sheet that you're about to receive. This is going to be a partner activity, and what we're going to do is just a little assessment of each other based on our character that we're being given. You can make your character as fun as you want to. I put as much information as I could on the sheet, but if your practitioner asks you some questions that are not on the sheet, please just make something up. We're not going to sell our partner anything. We're not going to work on building rapport. We don't have time for this. And whoever, like, I mean, it's just an unfair world where we have to get to the bottom of something, sell someone something, and explain the steps of what's going on all in one session here. So we're not doing that. We're just having a quick... a quick client intake, okay? So just we're going to ask them some questions, and we're going to try to go deeper. The goal of this game as the practitioner is to figure out which test out of the tests that we've talked about today you would like your client to take. And if you can, for bonus points, you're going to explain to your client, in a nice way, go over with your client how their digestive situation is connected to whatever their chief concern is. Okay? So there's two different characters. What we're going to do when I say it's time is we're going to turn around and you're going to work with the person directly behind you. So the first two rows are going to work together and the last two rows are going to work together. And we're going to have like 5 minutes each to do this consult. I'll let you know when it's time to switch. And then we're going to just recap and have a quick Q&A at the end. Okay, go. Oh, if you have a question, you can ask, you can maybe raise your hand. You can also ask Jan. I don't know where she is. You're supposed to have different ones. Mm. record. Is it wrong? All right. Thank you. I'm sorry that it's so short. I'm being told we're getting the cane. Yep. All right. I'm seeing the stop, and I'm purposefully ignoring you. I'm going rogue. What we didn't have time for, on top of just finishing the second assessment here, is to give your practitioner feedback. So I hid some stuff in there, and I was hoping that your practitioner would dig deeper and find out that you take communion or that you rescue ferrets or whatever. I want you to talk to your practitioner if you can. If you have time later, maybe hold on to your sheet. If you see your new friend in the hallway, let them know how much you enjoyed working with them, and if they really were able to get to the bottom of your issue. These are based on real people with some traits exaggerated. Yeah. Ferret lady, not so met, no. So, okay, so I'm going to take 1 minute of questions, and then I need to go. So I can probably do, like, two questions, and then we'll have to talk another time. Yeah. Oh, it was you, but that's okay.
Can taking oral progesterone increase yeast? Because I've heard that could be an issue.
Taking estrogen can increase yeast.
Progesterone.
Taking estrogen can increase
but
yeast.
Not progesterone.
Progesterone can do different things, but not directly increase yeast. It might make yeast feel worse in some ways. Okay. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll take one more super quick question. And then anyone else, we can try to talk later.
When you had talked about that bad tyrosine on the one part of the, I forgot what test that was.
Right.
That's not the same thing as the supplement of tyrosine, because sometimes I, you know, when people get tired, I actually, and also have curbed some of their cravings, you can actually use tyrosine.
Oh, you want to take a different form. So if you've, if they took the oat test and this is showing up, then you want to take a different form. We can actually talk about this in
So yeah. Would it be the 5-HTP or the L-tyrosine, the free amino?
Yeah, you don't want to take the L-tyrosine in okay. that case. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right,
okay.
You.
Okay.
So the Klebsiella, could you just expound on that just a little bit? Because you mentioned it, I think, in response to insulin resistance, perhaps. I'm not sure. Just share with us why it's bad.
Oh, the E. coli was associated with weight gain.
Are we still doing Klebsiella, though?
Yeah. So the Klebsiella I didn't mention specifically with the insulin resistance, but you could draw a line there. But yeah, it wasn't specific to that bacteria. Yeah.
What's so bad about it?
The Klebsiella, they can travel around the body. They can go to different organ systems, but they can also degrade the digestive mucosa. They have an enzyme that breaks down our mucosa, which is going to reduce our absorption, it's going to reduce our immunity, and it's going to reduce our just natural barrier against food particles coming
make
through.
Make us constipated?
The Clostridia more can make us constipated, but any of these can have that effect, yes.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Is she awesome? Give her a really big round of applause.